Good evening, everyone. My name is Chris, and I am the moderator for tonight's telephone town hall with the Ohio Education Association. We are so excited that you are all able to join us tonight. We're going to be joined tonight for a great conversation with President Scott DeMauro and Senator Sherrod Brown. Tonight, we're going to be discussing updates for education support professionals and taking your questions live. If you have a question for any of the speakers, just press zero on your phone to be added to the queue. We'll try to get to as many questions as we possibly can tonight. Again, my name is Chris, and I'll be hosting tonight's telephone town hall with OEA President Scott DeMauro and Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown. Right now, we're dialing out to thousands of people so they can hear about COVID-19 updates for education support professionals. We're going to get started in just a moment, but for those of you who are just joining who want to ask a question of Scott or Senator Brown or anyone else on tonight's call, please press zero on your phone. That's all you have to do is to be added to the queue is press zero. We're going to try to take as many questions as we can tonight, and we really want to hear from you. This is about having a conversation with the members of the Ohio Education Association. Without further ado, allow me to introduce Scott DeMauro.
Hey, good evening, everybody. It's so good to have you with us tonight. We know that we are in certainly strange and unprecedented times. I want to kick off tonight's call by thanking every single one of you for the work that you're doing on the front lines every day to keep our students safe, to keep our schools safe, and to advocate for your fellow members. We know that as the Ohio Education Association, our lifeblood is members like you who do such great work on behalf of students, and we appreciate your membership in our union. I want to begin by inviting U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown to say a few words. Senator Brown has been a fierce advocate for all of us during this crisis. He is a former OEA, friend of public education. He is someone who's been advocating for working people throughout his career in the House and the Senate and for decades before that. And he's somebody who's been advocating very hard to make sure that we have the resources that we need in order to weather this storm together and come out stronger on the other side. So without further ado, I want to turn it over to Senator Sherrod Brown.
Scott, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with so many of your members, Scott, so many OEA members, and thanks for the work that Scott DeMauro does. He's tireless in his advocacy for teachers, for the labor movement, for people in education, for non-teaching school employees, for workers generally, and local and state employees generally. So thank you for that. I know how challenging this time is. I'm on the phone all day. I have the privilege of working at home. A lot of Americans do, but a whole lot of Americans don't. I know some of you get to work at home. I know many of you are not. You're preparing and distributing food for children. You're helping with Chromebooks and other IT needs. You're cleaning and maintaining facilities. You're delivering food and homework assignments. You're doing all kinds of things to continue to serve children. Thank you for that. Earlier today, I met with over the phone with about 20 union members, USCW members. They work at stores like Kroger and Giant Eagle and Acme and Dave's and Cleveland and Heinen's and other grocery stores. And they are generally not paid a lot of money, and they get up and go to work every day. And it's up to us as policymakers and us to protect their health and make sure that that we can get them the kind of assistance that they should have. I appreciate the creativity of so many of you trying to keep students as connected as possible. For many of these other children you serve, school is the only community they have, and being cut off from that is so hard for them now. Some of you are also parents. You're trying to do your jobs. You're trying to look after your own children. At the same time, while many daycare facilities are closed, I know you're looking ahead to the next school year. You all know what happens to public schools when state and local budgets take a hit, especially with this legislature that doesn't seem to put much of a premium on public education. Let me give you a quick update on what's happened so far. The most recent bill that Congress passed to address the coronavirus epidemic, the pandemic. I've been in constant contact with the governor and with Dr. Acton. I spoke to Mike DeWine today while Governor DeWine was doing what, and this is not a partisan thing, while he was doing as a Republican what he should have been doing, working to make sure people in this state were safe. President Trump was still calling this a hoax and another effort by Democrats to impeach him. But fortunately, Governor DeWine listened to his medical professionals. We need to move forward, not look back. We need to make up for lost time for the couple of months before the White House recognized that this was the pandemic it is. So Congress went to work. Senator McConnell introduced a bill about 3 weeks ago that was fundamentally just another Wall Street, this time airline and Wall Street bailout. We fought back. The NEA helped us fight back. We were able to negotiate a package that works for people. $1,200 for every American who under a certain income, plus $500 per dependent child. We got tens of billions of dollars to hospitals and healthcare workers. We dramatically expanded unemployment insurance. And briefly, the way that works is even though Ohio's uninsured, but many people apply for Ohio's unemployment insurance. If they are eligible, they get it plus the $600. Ohio's unemployment definition, though, its criteria, its eligibility is pretty restricted. You can't get Ohio unemployment if you're part-time, if you're self-employed, if you're a gig worker, but you can get the federal. So some of you may live with people who have been laid off from part-time jobs. They may own a beauty salon or a barbershop. They can file. They need to file in Ohio, but they can get this. Even though they won't get Ohio unemployment in those cases, they will get the $600 a week federal that was in this bill up until the end of July. We provided $9 billion for child nutrition programs, some more money for SNAP. We got emergency funding to the state of Ohio to the tune of several billion dollars. We hope that state government will use part of those dollars. Some of it will go to local communities. Some of those dollars we hope go to education. We put a temporary moratorium on evictions and foreclosures. It also provides emergency relief funding to help elementary and secondary schools. Ohio should get about $500 million to support K-12. The governor will also have access to the governor's education relief fund. Ohio should get about $100 million from that pot of funding. We know we have to do more. We've seen a lot of people on social media saying thank you to the essential workers, including you on this call, you and bus drivers, city bus drivers, grocery store workers, people that work in hospitals. But saying thank you isn't enough. We need to pay you more and we need to protect you. Two of my top priorities are emergency safety protections for those people still going to work that are exposed to other workers and exposed to the public. Far too many people have gotten coronavirus in the workplace. 20 bus drivers and urban transit bus drivers have died from the coronavirus. They haven't had the protections government should provide them. The other priority is pandemic premium pay. I am advocating that people that are exposed to the coronavirus in the workplace, whether they're doing some of the work that you're all doing, working with children, working to protect children, cleaning up schools, doing all the things you're doing, whether you're working in a grocery store or a drugstore cashier, whether you're doing any number of these jobs, the federal government should provide pandemic premium pay. We should need a global pandemic to get our leaders in Washington to finally recognize that all work has dignity. I'm hopeful that about the only good thing that could come out of this pandemic is the recognition that so many moderate paid and low paid workers have such an important part in our society. We only notice you when the work isn't done, whether it's custodians, whether it's secretaries, whether it's security people, whether it's school bus drivers. Your work clearly matters. If you love your country, you fight for people who make it work, and that is you, and that means that we should enact our pandemic pay proposal in the next coronavirus bill that we pass, that passes the Senate and the House. So thank you for your work for our state and your service to our community. And Scott, thanks for the work that you do with the OEA.
Thank you so much, Senator Brown, for being with us. Thank you for all you're doing to advocate for working people, and we appreciate you fighting and hope that you continue the fight. We need this fourth round of COVID relief, and we need it fast, and we're going to do all we can to make sure that we mobilize our members to encourage your colleagues in the Senate, as well as the House and President Trump, to enact those measures to provide that support. So thank you again.
Thank you, Scott.
Senator.
Really appreciate it.
So as we continue the call, I just have a couple of quick comments, but we've got some important information to share with you and want to allow as much time as possible for your questions in conversation. First off, I want to talk about OEA's priorities through this crisis. And number one, first and foremost, is the safety and health of our students and our members. And we know that our ESP members have been on the line more than anybody, doing the kind of work that Senator Brown was talking about with food preparation and maintaining our buildings and delivering meals and maintaining technology while most of us are working from home and while most of our ESP members are working from home as well. We know that at times we have to step in and we have to fight to make sure that everybody is being protected, that the lives, the well-being of our members is of critical importance. And then we also know that we're facing a very, very serious economic challenge as a result of this crisis. With so many businesses that are struggling now, that have been shut down, with the state suffering immense losses of tax revenue, both sales tax and income tax revenue, with counties now starting to announce delays in collecting property taxes, all of those things are combining to put incredible pressure on school district budgets and also in higher education as well. We know many of you work in our colleges and universities. And so we have to make sure that we're doing all we can to advocate for funding. Our students need it. This crisis has exposed a level of inequity that we always knew existed, but it is just blowing that level of inequity wide open. We got to fight for a closing of those opportunity gaps. And we've got to make sure that as the state and local communities are struggling to meet the needs of our students and meet the needs of our members, that we've got the federal government stepping up and providing necessary support. So in a moment, our moderator is going to ask you to respond to our first poll question of the evening. But want to say that fighting for funding is really important. And we know that if we face a situation where there are layoffs, oftentimes, sadly, it is the critical education support professionals who work in our schools that are, facing the potential for layoffs, and we need to stand together to try to stop that from happening. There's been a lot of discussion about the timeline, and Governor DeWine in his comments today started to hint at, a gradual reopening of the economy. And said that there would be more to report on what's going to happen with schools next week. I don't have any insider knowledge on that, but I fully expect that we're going to be far from business as usual for a long time. And, assuming that we probably aren't going back to school in a normal way this school year, and we may not even be starting in a normal way this next school year, we're all going to have to work together to make sure that we're continuing to provide for our students' needs and standing up for each other. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris, our moderator, and I know he's got our first poll question of the evening.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. And again, for those of you who are just joining us, if you want to ask a question of us tonight, all you have to do is press zero. We really do want to hear from all of you. So our first poll question of the night, we want to hear from you. So after learning about the COVID-19 federal legislation that's already passed and our priorities for additional legislation, are you willing to call, write, email your legislators using the OEA Take Action site? Press 1 if yes, you are willing to do that, and you'll ask your friends or neighbor or family member to do so as well. press 2 if you will go to the OEA Take Action site and call, email, or write your legislator, or press 3 if you're not willing to take action at this time. Again, that's press 1 if you will go to the site and you will ask your friends, neighbors, or family to as well. Press 2 if just you will take action, and press 3 if you are unwilling to take action at this time. And again, we really want to hear from you tonight. So if you do have a question, all you have to do is press 0 on your phone, and that'll get you in line to ask your question. You know, right now, a little over 50% of you are saying that you are willing to take action and ask your friends or family to take action as well, which is great and shows how important the work we're all doing here is. Scott?
All right. Thank you, Chris. Before we move on to questions, and I see we have several people that have called in with some questions, and we're going to try to get to as many as we can. I want to turn to our lobbyist, Melissa Clark, who is going to share a quick update on some things that have been happening at the state level that are of particular interest. Melissa, take it away.
Thank you, President Zamarro, and good evening, everyone. I was asked to briefly provide an update on the state budget. Due to the COVID-19 health crisis, Ohio anticipates an initial budget shortfall between $2 to $2.5 billion. And in order to address this shortfall, Governor DeWine has asked state departments to identify cuts to their budgets of up to 20%. This plan on proposed reductions has yet to be announced. OEA, of course, is very concerned about the budget shortfall, as we don't know exactly how it will directly impact K through 12 education funding, the state share of instruction, which is the core support for public colleges and universities, and education programs at our County Board of Developmental Disabilities, as well as our correctional institutions. OEA believes that state leaders should utilize funds from Ohio's $2.7 billion rainy day fund and federal resources to help address these budget gaps. And we will continue our advocacy efforts with state leaders and legislators to protect state funding for education. One way that you can help, and I believe our moderator just asked if you were willing to take action, is to take a minute of your time and visit the OEA homepage. Under the What's New section, you click on the tab which states urge Congress to provide more COVID-19 relief. This will allow you to send an email to your U.S. congressional representative requesting them to provide critical additional funding to states to help fill state budget gaps, and also to provide support for health protections for school employees and expand child nutrition and internet access for students. Of course, once we have more details on the state budget plan, we will provide OEA membership an update. I would also like to mention that in late March, House Bill 197 was signed into law. This bill includes several changes to current law in reaction to this public health crisis. The changes to law are temporary, lasting just for this year. It allows school districts to use distance learning to make up for any missed days or hours of instruction caused by the ordered closure of Ohio schools. Additional provisions, which I'm sure many of you have heard, include the cancellation of state testing, the elimination of the school report cards, freezing EdChoice eligibility, and an extension of the primary voting until April 28th. This concludes my remarks, and at this time, I will send it back to President DeMarro.
All right. Thank you so much, Melissa. Really appreciate that information. And again, I would encourage everybody, go to our website, oheta.org, and you can take action there. Chris, how are we doing in terms of the response to the first poll question?
We're doing great. We are still at a little over 50% who said, 53% now, who said they would take action, tell their friends to, and then another 33% who said that they themselves would take action.
All right. That's great. So before I turn to the next speaker, I want to do one question, and then we'll come back to Q&A in a little bit. And Robert Durst is a bus driver and has a question. And Robert, go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. I'm a bus driver for Deepwood Special Needs. I was wondering if due to the closures that we've had so far, if they were going to maybe extend the school year on into the summer, and if we might have to redo the way we transport our students, if there might be some changes for safety on the school buses and spread the students and the drop off and pick up times off.
Yeah.
I was curious.
No, thank you very much for the question. And I guess the first thing that I'll say is that House Bill 197 that Melissa was just referencing earlier does make clear that the distance learning that school districts have been providing does count towards minimum school year requirements. We're not expecting that there's going to be an expectation for makeup days to be happening during the summer. And so at this point, the answer is if there's not makeup days, we wouldn't expect that there's going to be school bus runs. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens in terms of how this whole thing plays out. But I think it's a really important question. It's on a lot of people's minds. As of right now, we're not expecting any makeup days to be required. You know, there is the possibility that there's going to be a need for some kind of remediation, extra support. And if that happens, then depending on what is bargained at the local level, we may see the need for some kind of support during the summer. But again, all of that is really going to depend on what the Ohio Department of Health and the governor decide in terms of when it's safe for people to go back into a learning setting. Let me just ask if any of our staff people have, and I know you, Robert, you're from a county board of DD. Melissa, if you or anybody else on the line from staff has anything to add to that. All right. I don't think so. Okay. So let me now introduce our next speaker, Shelley Jackson. Is an LRC in Western Ohio. She's been doing some great work when it comes to supporting our education support professionals, particularly as it relates to food service. And Shelley has some really good information to share on best practices related to food preparation. So I'll turn it over to Shelley Jackson.
Thank you. Hey, guys. I want to say thank you, everyone, for what you're doing. You guys are out there on the battlefield, and I consider you battle buddies. Prior to my work in the classroom and with my work with OEA, I was a combat medic and quality assurance food inspection specialist with the United States Army. And it was during my active duty service that it provided me with opportunities to study and work in the field of public health and safety. And I'm very thankful that I am certified and serve safe as a food handler, manager, instructor, and proctor. And I've had opportunities to train hundreds of commercial restaurant employees using ServSafe food handling and managerial courses. Even before COVID, we know that the Ohio Revised Code requires food service industry to follow strict local public health guidelines, and that it also defers oversight and control to the local health agencies. So as such, the school districts are required to work with their local health district to adopt and enforce safety protocols with guidance from ServSafe. Now, you got to keep in mind, in Ohio, there are 113 local health districts. So there could be some modifications all over the state. But now we're in COVID. To help businesses create a safer work environment, there have been several agencies, such as the World Health Organization, OSHA, the CDC, and even the Ohio Department of Health, who have issued COVID-19 mitigation strategies. But what about our school cafeterias, and what do these strategies specifically look like for school districts preparing and delivering school meals? So it was our hope to develop an employee safety guidance presentation that helps outline safer work practices for kitchen staff or volunteers who are preparing food. which takes into account the social distancing guidelines, food prep areas being 6 feet apart from one another, wearing proper gloves, gowns, and masks, and even considering menu modifications to help reduce the amount of prep work required. It does remind the basic temperature danger zones, the proper way to hand wash, food storage specifications, and how to put gloves on and off. It also does recommend that all food, such as like ready-to-eat fruit, apples and pears, to be wrapped or included in single-service bagging to help minimize the amount of handling and exposure. There is a method to address on-site hand washing for temporary food service stations. It offers non-congregate school nutrition guidelines. The three that we typically are hearing about are the curbside, bus drop-off, and home delivery methods. And these guidelines do take into account the limited availability of the N95 masks. It does do a reminder about the importance of FERPA compliance when you're handling documentation related to information handling while doing the food delivery. And it does also outline cleaning and sanitizing recommendations that's specific to COVID-19. You can find this presentation by going to the OHEA.org website, click on the COVID-19 Frequently Asked Questions, jump down to Support Staff Questions, and find the question, what do I need to know about the safety of food service employees during the COVID-19 pandemic? You will find the download link, click on it, and you can download it. I do suggest that if you would like to schedule a more detailed presentation of this material, please reach out to your LRC, and I am more than willing to assist your LRC. That concludes my presentation. I will turn it back over to President DeMauro.
Hey, thank you very much, Shelley. That's really, really useful stuff. And by the way, if you don't know who your LRC or labor relations consultant is, then contact your local president, and they can connect you with your LRC to connect you with more of these resources. So, Chris, I think before we get to some more Q&A, we have another poll question. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. We do. And again, if you want to ask a question tonight, please press 0 on your phone. So our question now relates to those of you who are still reporting to work. And we want to know, do you feel like you're being provided with the proper PPE and safety protocols and procedures? So if you feel like you are getting the proper PPE and safety protocol and procedures, please press 1. Press 2 if you're getting some of what you need but not quite everything, and press 3 if you are not being provided with the proper PPE and safety protocols. Again, it's press 1 if you are being provided with all the PPE and safety protocols procedures you need, 2 if you're getting some of it but not all of it, and 3 if you know you are not being provided with the proper PPE and safety protocols. And again, we really want to hear from you, so if you do have a question, please go ahead and press 0 on your phone.
All right. Thank you. So would love to hear your feedback on that. That's really valuable information. Your answer to that question about PPE will help us in our advocacy at the statewide level. I am in weekly communication and actually often much more frequently than that with our state superintendent, with legislators. And so we want to identify if we've got problems in terms of the support and protection that's being provided to our members. I'm going to introduce our next staff member in just a second. But before we do that, I want to open up for a question that I think the person I'm about to introduce can probably answer. Sherry Hood from Eaton, you have a question.
Yeah, I had an employee contact me today and ask a question as far as if you are exposed and if you test positive to COVID in the workplace, is that considered workers' comp or is that FMLA?
That's a really good question. Thank you, Sherry. And that is a great segue to our next speaker, Eric Urban, from our Education Policy Research and Member Advocacy Department, who's going to talk about frequently asked questions from members. And if you could answer that question about workers' comp versus FMLA for members that contract COVID-19, and then talk about some other frequently asked questions that you hear. Eric.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you all for the opportunity to address you tonight. Sherry, with respect to your question specifically, there's a lot of questions regarding exposure and where you are exposed and how you can prove you're exposed. Right now, the Ohio Job and Family Services, which handles unemployment compensation and the Ohio Department of Workers' Comp, seem to be providing guidance that unless you can actually draw a direct line back to the employer, that it would be likely covered as FMLA or other leave, which leads directly into my conversations. You were almost clairvoyant about what I was going to talk about tonight, which is a couple of provisions that relate to the Family First Coronavirus Response Act, which is the first piece of legislation that was passed after the coronavirus hit. So in this section of federal law, the government has actually loosened and provided some new and better things for the employees in response to the COVID-19. So the two areas I want to cover specifically tonight are interrelated, and they're the emergency paid sick leave and the emergency FMLA provisions of that law. So both of these provisions apply to all public sector employees. So any one of our ESP members, these apply directly to you. Both of these provisions came into effect on April 2nd, 2020, and they are set to expire on December 31st of 2020. So dealing with the first one, the emergency paid leave, this provides you the ability to have your full daily rate of pay up to $511 per day for 10 days if you meet one of these following qualifications. If you're complying with a federal, state, or local quarantine or isolation order related to the COVID-19 virus, to comply with the advice of a healthcare provider to self-quarantine due to concerns related to COVID-19, or because the employee is experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 and is seeking a medical diagnosis or actually has come down with COVID-19. So if you fall into one of those categories, you would receive your full daily rate of pay up to $511 per day for 10 days. There's also a provision in the emergency paid leave that provides you two-thirds of your daily rate of pay up to $200 a day if you meet one of these qualifications: to care for a family member who is subject to the quarantine or isolation order that is related to COVID-19, to care for a child of the employee if the school or place of care is closed or otherwise unavailable because of the COVID-19 precautions, or the employee is experiencing any other substantially similar conditions specified by the Secretary of Health and Human Services or the Secretary of Treasury or the Secretary of Labor. So in that, and if you fall into one of those categories, so you're caring for someone who has come down with or with COVID-19 or is experiencing a quarantine or an isolation because of a suspected exposure, then you would receive that. Now, these benefits, these emergency paid leave days are available regardless of how long you've been employed. So you do not have to earn a day and a quarter, a month, or anything else. As long as you've been employed for at least a few days, then you are covered by this. It is allowed to be used before, and again, before any of your other paid leaves, including the sick leave that your collective bargaining agreement and or a higher revised code provide you. So you actually have an additional number of paid days if you fall into one of those two categories. The employer cannot require you to use any other paid leaves first, and they cannot modify any policies that they may have in place right now that would avoid compliance with the law. So these are truly emergency paid leave days that if you fall into one of the categories, again, if you are personally experiencing COVID symptoms, you've been under an isolation order or self-quarantine due to exposure, you have full day's pay up to $511 per day for 10 days. And if you have a family member that has been exposed or is under an isolation order, or if you're taking care of children because the school is closed or their place of care is closed, then you have two-thirds of your daily rate of pay up to $200 a day for $2,000 total. That's in addition to any other leaves you would have available to you. Now, the second portion of the law talks about the Emergency Family Medical Leave Act, which is an expansion of the traditional Family Medical Leave Act to cover COVID-related illnesses and care for children under the age of 18. So in order to qualify for the Emergency Family Medical Leave Act, you must have been employed for at least 30 calendar days prior to you taking the leave. If you're unable to work or telework due to a need for to leave, if you are unable to work or telework due to a need for leave to care for your child under the age of 18 because their school has been closed or their place of care has been closed, then you have the ability to use the FMLA, the emergency FMLA, in addition to any other illnesses. Now, in this provision, the first 10 days are unpaid. However, you can substitute either your own sick leave, personal leave, or vacation time, or the emergency paid sick leave provisions of the law in order to cover those 10 days. Following the first 10 days, your employer must provide you paid administrative leave not less than two-thirds of your regular rate of pay based upon your hours of work. The employer can require you to use the appropriate percentage of your accrued but unused sick leave, personal leave, or vacation leave. This is different, and I want to note this is different than what was shared on Tuesday night's ESP leader call. Again, both of these provisions were written into law just a few weeks ago, and as we know, any time that federal legislation is written, all the policies and procedures are handed down to the different departments of the federal government in order to enact them. They've offered two revisions since this law came into effect on both the emergency FMLA and the emergency paid leave. So we continue to update our information as soon as we receive it from the appropriate agencies. So you may be required to use your own earned sick leave, personal leave, or vacation leave at the two-thirds rate in order to qualify for those days and to be paid for those days. One important note on the emergency FMLA is if you've already taken traditional FMLA during this year, if you've taken 10 weeks, then you do not get another 12 weeks for the emergency FMLA. It is 12 weeks in aggregate across the year. Also, if you have a plan year, a calendar year plan year for your FMLA, like it begins on July 1st and ends on June 30th, the 12 weeks of emergency FMLA will carry through the period of April 2nd through December 31st, so you do not get a restart on those 12 weeks should you need them. The Emergency Family Medical Leave Act, lastly, the payment is not to exceed $200 a day or $10,000 in total for that time period of the 12 weeks. Some provisions that were passed at the state level that I wanted to make sure our ESP members are aware of, and the House Bill 197, which gave the state superintendent the authority to extend a number of timelines related to everything from educator, licensure, to bus driver physicals and those types of things. They have made revisions, so I want to make you aware of them. First of all of the bus drivers that have to have their T8 annual physicals, your medical certifications, those timelines have been extended to no earlier than September 1st. So 9/1 is the earliest possible date that you would have to have your T8 done. Or if the state of emergency extends past June 3rd, then it would be 90 days after the end of the state of emergency. The Ohio Department of Education and the People Transportation Safety Division will be letting drivers know when that date finally comes, but will be no later than December 1st. Timelines are also being extended for those that need certification or recertification with the onboard instructors, but you have completed the classroom components, so you will have some time to get that done once the state of emergency has been lifted. For paraprofessionals, you're in the same boat that bus drivers are in. Your license renewals are extended to no earlier than September 1st and no later than 90 days after the end of the state of emergency or December 1st. A special note for our preschool paraprofessionals, those of you that need to have your professional development in order to work in the preschool, either the 10 hours or the 45 hours, ODE has indicated that they're not at this time considering moving those requirements down the line. They are biannual requirements, and there are a number of online sources where you can complete that professional development. So if you're working in a preschool and you need to capture some professional development time, I would encourage you to work with your local labor relations consultant and your supervisor to see how the school district can help you meet those needs. And last but not least, If you are up for your BCI FBI background check, that timeline has not been extended, so you need to go ahead and make sure you get your BCI background checks done, the once every 5-year background check. Contact your supervisor to determine if the district is taking fingerprints. If they're not, or you can't find a place that is, you can contact the Ohio BCI, and I have a number there, so I'll give you just a half second, and we'll make sure that this gets in up on the website. The number to contact the BCI is 877-224-0043, and they have some instructions that they can give you on at-home collection of your fingerprints and submitting those to them for your every 5-year renewal. So with that, Scott, I will turn it back over to you, and thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Eric. We really appreciate that. Please stay on the line because I think we're going to have a few questions that you might be able to answer. Before we get to questions, Chris, let me ask you, the second poll question was, are folks being provided with the proper PPE and safety protocols and procedures? What are we hearing from folks on that?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a mix. 39% of the folks said they are being provided with the proper PPE and safety protocols. 38%, yes, but not everything. And then 23% said no, they're not.
All right, thank you. I want to turn the next question to Samantha Thompson from Shawnee Classified Employee Association, because I think your question is relevant to that last poll question. Samantha.
Hello.
Hey, go
Hello.
Ahead.
Can you hear me? Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to know what measures the OEA are taking to make sure that those procedures and guidelines are taken seriously and our safety is being met.
Hey, thank you very much for the question, and I will tell you that, you know, safety of our members is at the very, very top of our priority list. We are using feedback like we're getting tonight to help inform the advocacy that we do. We are developing a series of recommendations from our headquarters staff, that our labor relations consultants and our local leaders, you know, will be able to use in advocacy. This is what the power of a strong union is all about, that we learn from one another, that we support one another, and that we come together to advocate for each other. And I know you may feel in your local that you're kind of out on an island, but in reality, you're one of 122,000 members of the OEA. And so this is why we're doing this tonight, is to hear from you. But we will continue through our LRCs to make sure that you and every other local president has the support that you need to advocate for the safety of your members. So thank you very much for the question. I'm going to turn to another question, and this relates to, I think, the food service issue. Lori Nicolaou from Mansfield, and I apologize if I butchered the pronunciation of your name, but Lori from Mansfield, tell us your question.
Yes, we're still packing lunches, of course, for the kids. And my question is, would we get extra hazard pay for packing those lunches?
That's a really good question. Eric, let me turn this question to you. What do we know? Is there anything, any kind of provision in the law for hazard pay?
At this point, there is not in the situation that has been outlined. And so what we are encouraging folks to do is to first turn to your collective bargain agreement to find out if there is some sort of epidemic, pandemic, calamity, life-threatening type situation where you will be entitled to additional pay. If not, then that's clearly something that should be being discussed at the local level between the local union and management around the exposure that you see and how we can best remediate that at the local level. But we're not seeing anything, at least at the state level at this point, as it relates to food service individuals or bus drivers or anybody else that are being put into those situations.
Yeah. And I'll just add that hazard pay for people that are on the front lines, you know, is part of what Senator Brown is advocating for in Congress. You know, he's recommending time and a half for everybody that's doing work similar to what you're describing. So it's not in the law now, but it doesn't mean that it can't be as legislation moves forward. And that's why it's important to stay politically active. Debbie Fraser from North Union EA, you have a question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
My question was, some of us are not working, going into work every day, and some of us are, and we were told that we have to go in this summer and make up the hours that we're getting paid for while we're staying at home. And is that correct?
I'm going to ask Eric to respond to this question, because that's another really good question that ties both to law and collective bargaining.
Absolutely. So Ohio Revised Code 3319.081 makes it very clear that any day that a school is closed due to an epidemic and or calamity, so they separate those two provisions out, calamity different than a pandemic or an epidemic, as the state legislature uses it, is to be paid. There is no intention in that law to make up those days, time-wise, hour-wise, or anything else. And the collective bargaining agreement may provide further information around those types of scenarios. My experience is that very few of our contracts, because it's been more than 101 years, contemplated a true pandemic or an epidemic as what we're facing at this point. So contacting your local LRC and having a conversation with them about what you're being told, making sure that the management is providing clarity around what they're saying, and that that local advocate that you have through your LRC should be able to assist you through that process, because that's not our understanding of the law at this time.
Thank you, Eric. Next, I want to turn to April Previa from Lakeview School Support Association. April?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just had a question similar to the last question in regards to not going into work but still getting paid, though. I work as a paraprofessional, and we're still being paid through special education funding, and I was concerned about funding for the future if we're still getting paid and we're not working, since students aren't in school and we're not working with them at home.
I think that's a really good question. I'm sure that's a question on a lot of people's minds. I think Eric answered the question about, you know, for the immediate term, and that is that the law really is on our side. And by the way, laws like that don't get passed, you know, by accident. They get passed because folks like you work together to advocate for passage of laws to protect folks' pay during times of emergency like this. But your question is really about what happens, you know, in terms of jeopardy for future funding. Melissa Clark, this really gets at some legislative questions and state budget questions. What would you say about people that are concerned about the funding of their program, particularly in special education, if they're in a situation where they're getting paid but not being required to report to work right now?
Sure. I think that we all need to be concerned about the state budget shortfalls and what's going to happen. We are doing everything that we can as a state organization to protect that funding and to protect jobs moving forward, and we will continue to do that. And that's why it's important for us to pass additional federal legislation, as well as to tap into that rainy day fund to ensure that we can protect jobs moving forward.
Okay, thank you. Chris, I know you got another poll question, and I think we're going to have time to hear from two or three more members with their questions. But before we do that, why don't we go ahead and do the last poll question of the evening?
Great. So the last poll question for tonight is, do you feel like the school administrators are being supportive during the transition in work duties? Press 1 if you feel they are being very supportive. Press 2 if you feel they are being somewhat supportive. And press 3 if you feel they are not being supportive. Again, the question is, do you feel like the school administrators are being supportive during the transition in work duties? Press 1 if you feel they are being very supportive. 2 for somewhat supportive. 3 if they are not being supportive.
All right. And your feedback on that question is also really important. The advocacy that you do at the local level is really critical, and having a good working relationship between the local union and administration is critical. But I'll also say that I am in regular communication with people that represent superintendents and school boards and school business officials and principals. And so in my interaction with them, it's really helpful for me to know how you feel about the support that you're getting from administrators. And if there's a way that we can try to advocate for you at the state level, we want to try to do that. All right. So while you're responding to that, I want to turn to Linda Fisher. Linda is from Northeast Ohio. Linda, you have a question.
Yes, good evening, and thank you for taking my question. And that is related to us working as bus drivers in a very confined environment with a lot of sick children oftentimes, and not having the proper protocols in place for decontaminating the bus or the proper PPE to do that. And I was thinking that this is really something that needs to be addressed. There's approximately, let's see here, there's approximately 2 million children in Ohio, and 17,000 school bus drivers deliver 80% of those kids every year. And I'm pretty sure that we're not the only ones who are not getting the support that we need in terms of the buses being cleaned properly. You know, teachers and administrators and support staff that work inside of a schoolhouse, they have the benefit of a janitor. School bus drivers don't have anyone except themselves. And like I said, it's a very confined environment. I have 150 kids approximately in the morning and 150 in the evening. So I'm exposed to 300 children in a very confined space. I'd like to see some form of legislation requiring school systems, the district, to provide professional outside janitorial services for the buses and not put that burden on top of all the other things that a driver needs to do to maintain, you know, a safe environment for the children and things like that. I would like to see some form of legislation, someone advocating for the drivers and expecting the school districts to take care of that. So I'm wondering if we can do that. Is there a way that we can address that? And how would we go about doing it?
Linda, thank you very much for the question. And, you know, I think we're going to have to look into that. You know, this is one of those things where the unprecedented nature of the crisis that we're in means that we have to take some new approaches. Generally, we've been pretty resistant to what might come across as subcontracting or privatization of work that ordinarily is done by our own members. And that would include, having somebody else other than bus drivers clean the buses. But what you're suggesting, I think, raises a really an interesting question and challenge. And it's something that we will definitely look into to see if there is some way to address that legislatively. So I know we have a number of questions. We may not have time to get to more of those because we're getting close to the hour. But Chris, let me turn it back to you. First off, tell us about what we're hearing from our third poll question, and then tell us what happens with anybody that has a question that they wanted to raise that we didn't have time to answer tonight.
Great. Thanks, Scott. So in terms of the poll question, 67% of you said that your administrators were being very supportive during the transition in work duties. 28% said somewhat supportive, and only 5 said they were not supportive. Those are pretty good results there. And, you know, as we're wrapping up tonight, if we didn't get to your question, at the end of the event, we're going to go ahead and put everyone into a voicemail so you can leave your question or your comment. Just tell us your name, what EA you're with, and where you are, and ask your question, and we'll try to follow up with you as best as we can.
All right. Well, thank you very much. So that brings us to the end of the hour. We had a tremendous number of people that joined us for tonight's call. Again, times like these, even though we're not physically together, it's a great reminder of how we're really in this challenge together, and we're going to survive and we're going to thrive only because of the support that we provide to one another. So I want to thank each and every one of you again for all that you do, for all that you do for our schools and for our students and for one another. And I want to wish you a great evening. Thanks very much.